Well, welcome to the Sabbath Hour. I'm Brother Gregory, and I hope I'm being heard. I forgot to push my code number when I first
came.
You're
fine.
Okay, that was you clicking me in, I guess.
It was. Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, I bet I did another one of those sit down about 120 seconds before I go on the air.
Well, you know, it's so funny because I sit there and, you know, this is all done on all of us hanging around doing the same thing at the same time, all of us being in different states. It's just a miracle to me how we are able to do this. So thank you very much for being with us today.
Okay, well, thank you, Cheryl. Yeah, I wasn't able to do my own show this morning, Keys of the Kingdom, on Liberty Radio Live, but today happened to be the only day that sheep shearers come out to our valley. So we had to shear sheep from early this morning. And so we were out before sunup getting ready for that and started shearing. And we just finished loading 1,000 pounds of wool onto a trailer to be shipped off. And I dashed in and my wife bought me water. I sat down, dialed the number, and then forgot to push one. But anyway.
Well, I'm starting to recognize your phone number, so okay. We're good.
But at least this job has got me sitting down instead of wrestling sheep to the ground. But anyway, we've got that major chore out of the way so far this year. We won't shear again until next year. We may have a shearing demonstration at our festival in September. At the end of September, we have a festival here. We have people coming from all over. I'm surprised at how far away they come from. We've had them all the way from Australia. But I know we've got people coming from Iowa and Texas, and I think we've got people coming all the way from Connecticut and New York. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure we have some coming from New York because they're showing up early to help us start getting ready for what we call the Burning Bush Festival, and that we're kind of the counterculture. That this is going to be the opposition festival to the Burning Man Festival, which a lot of people have heard about out here on the West Coast.
Uh-huh.
And Burning Man Festival is pretty New Agey, a little wild. You know, there's not as much clothing as they probably need going on around there. We have large numbers of people.
I hadn't heard that aspect of it. A friend of mine was a participant for a long time running security.
Oh, okay. And, yeah. I have a friend whose brother is one of the major organizers, and he lives in Hawaii, and he spends most of his year just getting ready for the Burning Man Festival. But last year they claimed to have produced the largest, most populated photo of naked people ever. They actually took it from a helicopter, so I guess it's not that risque. But we're probably not going to do that at the Burning Bush Festival.
Probably not? Okay.
No, probably not. We're the counterculture. The fact is Israel had festivals several times a year. And those festivals were not just parties, but they were festivals. They were a time to get together and bring your skills and your wares and trade and share and renew old ties, because it was a major part of organizing their government. It was the way in which they got together and figured out what they needed to do and like I say, renew old friendships, because they were a nation that was bound together by faith, hope, and charity. There were no taxes in early Israel except what you chose to give to your minister. And your minister was the minister to 10 families. And then he got together and picked a minister for 10 ministers like himself. And they did this, and they organized the entire nation and the entirety of their government simply by that and free will offerings. Because even though they talk about a tithing, it says very clearly in the Old Testament, you tithe to them according to their service. No service, no tithing. So it's an amazing concept to have a actual government that operated on free will donations. But because they did that, after, you know, 40 years in the wilderness, they developed ties with each other, binding ties that were based on loyalty and honor and trust and charity and forgiveness and kindness, and it made them an invincible nation. And America used to be that way, but now it's gone another way. It's gone the way of socialism. It's gone the way of subsidizing almost every aspect of our lives through the government that we elect, who call themselves benefactors, give us all these benefits, but exercise authority, compelling us to contribute. This is exactly what Herod did at the time of Christ, and exactly what Christ preached against, John the Baptist preached against, and in fact, Moses and Abraham preached against. And so here we are out in the desert, preaching against it too. But we're not just preaching against it, we're actually organizing people. So that our Burning Bush Festival is our fall festival. That we'll have another festival probably at Pentecost. And Pentecost was actually your major election festival. That was when you chose up, because you, when you organize a society, it's easy for 10 families in a local area to pick a minister because he's right there. But then when he picks a minister with 10 other ministers like himself, they can sometimes be a little farther apart. But when you go up to the next level, they're often very far apart, because the minister they pick gets together with 10 other, you know, 9 other ministers like himself, and they pick a minister. And this is how you get the highest servant, because each of these ministers are actually servants. They have no exercising authority. They cannot compel you to support the government. They perform the mission of the government, health, education, and welfare. And the better they do that, the more people contribute to them. So they're motivated by profit, but because it profits them to be a charitable servant-type government. They have no exercising authority. They cannot compel people to do anything. But necessity compels people to come together, gather together in this very simple network, and become minutemen for each other, caring about each other's rights. Now, many of you have heard me talk. You heard me talk about that over and over again, but that is why they had the festivals in ancient Israel, is to renew those ties, to make sure that they were organized not just in the local congregation of 10 or hundreds, but nationally, so that ministers would come from all over. You might not be able to go to the fall festival, which they call the Feast of Booths or the Feast of Tabernacles, but you could certainly finance your minister so he could go. And maybe a couple of people from your congregation could go. And they represented your congregation. And not to make elections and decide you have to pay more taxes or compel you to have health care or whatever. They did it just because they knew it was important to organize, because other governments were organizing and would often invade or attempt to invade Israel. But they were extremely strong people back then because they had this honor and dedication. Now, the Nazis had honor and dedication too, but it was an allegiance to a central leader, not to righteousness. And that leader said that it was right to do this or right to do that. And of course, we have Israel today that has the same concept. And they gather together and they create a formidable army because of the fact the more enemies they have, the stronger their bonds go. But Israel today has iron coin, which is not just in weights and measures. It has heavy progressive income tax, which is usury. It has property tax, which is usury. It elects men who exercise authority one over the other and call themselves benefactors because they have a strong socialist government now in Israel. So that's absolutely the opposite of what Moses was preaching. And so Moses would turn over his grave when he sees this. But Christ would, if he was in his grave, turn over in his grave to see what Christians have become, because today Christians are socialists. And I didn't really prepare anything for the show, but for the last half hour as I was lifting these 500-pound bales, actually, I didn't lift them. I rolled them over onto a farmhand track and lifted them.
you were becoming my hero there for a second.
We got them packed pretty tight. We have pretty heavy wooled sheep. And so there may be more than 500 pounds in each of those bales. I mean, they are heavy. They're just a solid rock. But my son and I rolled them over onto some forks on a tractor, and we lifted them up on the trailer. So we're getting lazy in our old age, but anyway, I was thinking, what would I talk about on this show? Usually I talk about the same subjects that I was talking about on Keys to the Kingdom and just try to kind of do a recap to bring it all into a condensed format of 1 hour. But since I didn't have that show, I thought, well, what should I talk about? Well, in the news, we have the Supreme Court ruling, the dreaded Judge Roberts, was a swing vote, that voted that it's Obamacare is a good thing and legal. And a lot of people were all upset that this took place. We had one of our ministers out there in the Midwest who actually wrote an article, which I'm going to try to get him to send that article out to everybody in our network so they can read it on the net. I don't think everybody has shared the link to that article. But he shared on a meetup.com, he shared this article, and he predicted exactly what would happen and exactly why. And I condensed it down to one single quote, which is from basically a concept from a particular U.S. case, which is Wickard versus Filburn. And down to one line in that, it says, it is hardly lack of due process for the government to regulate that which it subsidizes. And in that single sentence, you really see the distinction and the power of modern government. Modern government has tremendous power over and influence over your lives today for one single fact. It heavily subsidizes your life. I mean, there are laws on the books now that you cannot grow grain on your own property for your own consumption without being regulated by the government, because the fact that you grow grain, that means you won't have to buy your bread in the store, and therefore you affect commerce. And commerce is heavily subsidized. But it's not only commerce that's heavily subsidized. It's you that's heavily subsidized. And people say, well, I'm not subsidized. The government doesn't give me any money. You know, I work for a living. Well, where'd you go to school? Did you go to public school? You're subsidized. If your house catches on fire, who puts it out? Fire department? You're subsidized. You see, if you have a problem, do you call the police, 911? Well, you're subsidized. You see, that's how it's the greatest destroyers of liberty are the givers of gifts, gratuities, and benefits. And in Israel, they had a fire department. It was you and your neighbors. They had a police department. It was you and your neighbors. If somebody robbed you, you went out in the streets and there was a hue and cry, somebody's robbing me, and everybody ran to your aid. Here's his tracks, let's follow him. They go out and they'd make a citizen's arrest. Did they just beat the tar out of the guy? Well, no, there was a law. You drag him back and you try him. What do you use? The jury. What's the jury? The heads of 10 families and the minister. And the minister's minister, 12 men. And they would try him. If he's from another congregation, well, you could pick 6 from your congregation and 6 from the other congregation. You have to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. You have to be seeking righteousness in everything you do. Your loyalty is not to a man. to a corporate body, to some sort of national leaders. Your loyalty is to righteousness. And this, of course, is why Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Now, the word phrase, kingdom of God, kingdom of heaven, are interchangeable. We can see throughout the Bible and the New Testament, sometimes you see the phrase kingdom of heaven, sometimes you see the phrase kingdom of God, and it's simply the different apostles telling the same story. One calls it kingdom of God, the other one calls it kingdom of heaven. And if you look closely in the Bible, you'll see the phrase kingdom of heaven doesn't show up anywhere except in Matthew. He's the only one who uses that phrase. And the reason why, and there's debate on this, but many scholars will agree with me, is because Matthew wasn't originally written in the Greek. And when you translated it from the Aramaic to the Greek, it translated kingdom of heaven. Now, if you go to some of the major scholars today in Greek language, just Greek language, not biblical Greek scholars, but Greek scholars who studied ancient Greek, they will tell you that there is no word, and we quote this in several of our books, there is no word in the English language that is a perfect translation of the Greek word ouranos, which is what they translate into heaven. In fact, ouranos is defined as the sky above, the sphere of the sky above, because they actually knew the planet was round back then. A lot of people think that, you know, Columbus discovered that the world was round. The fact is there were people measuring the circumference of the world hundreds of years before Christ and did so very accurately. And even Irish monks were doing it, you know, a few hundred years after Christ. So lots of people knew it was round. And it's just, you're just kind of sucker punched into believing that people thought the world was flat, because most people didn't. It was kind of a joke that sailors used to play on new sailors, trying to scare them. Well, yeah, the world's flat. You know, we'll probably sail off the edge, knowing all the while, because many of these sailors had navigated. There had been many people that navigated over to America long before Columbus, hundreds of years before Columbus. To tell you the truth, thousands of years before Columbus, because they knew the world was round. But anyway, back to the point is that this whole idea of, well, let's go on back to this idea of why you have health care, and it's just a tax. It's kind of a funny deal because of the fact that people were asking Obama if it was a tax, and he kind of said, no, it's not a tax, but now the Chief Justice who swore him in secretly in the White House, because they didn't count the oath that he took out there in the public. They had another oath taking later on in the White House. They didn't use the Bible when he took the oath in the White House. And nobody bothered recording what he actually said. So the only recording we have is the one they said didn't count. And so anyway, Roberts was the judge they used to swear him in secretly in the White House, not recorded, not filmed, and we're supposed to believe that he's properly taken the oath of office. The reality is this Roberts is the one with the swing vote, and it's based on this idea that they can regulate that which they subsidize. So if you want your freedoms back, what you have to do is gather together with other people so that you don't need to take the subsidies. Remember back when Israel or the sons of Jacob were found short of provisions during a famine, depression, whatever you want to call it, recession. They didn't have enough money or food to feed themselves, and they ended up going to Egypt. And they got provisions from Egypt on condition that after that, 20% of everything they earned, their 20% of their working year, their working day, they had to work for the Pharaoh. they had to serve the federal 20% income tax is what was started back then for Israel. I use Israel as the sons of Jacob, but it actually everybody in Egypt went under this what they call corvée system of statutory labor, and we call it bondage because you have to work 20% of your day for the government, and that was called bondage back then. Now we do that today in America, we do it in Australia, we do it in England, we do it in Canada, we do it all over the world. Santo Domingo does it. You go down and you apply for a Cecilia card in Santo Domingo. About 20% of the people in Santo Domingo don't get the card. Now, in America, there's maybe 2% that don't get the card. And the card we call it here is the Social Security card. And when you sign up for that, you're saying it's okay if the government forces my neighbor to contribute to my welfare. Because what you pay in goes out to the needy at the time that you're working. There's nothing on deposit for you. You're paying in to take care of the needy of your society in what I would call impure religion, because pure religion is taking care of the needy of your society without forcing contributions. Impure religion is to do it by forcing the contributions. So that's what you do when you sign up for Social Security. But there are two purposes in the Social Security Act. The other one is, you know, you're not just going to pay in. It used to be, I think, like 3% or 4% you paid in. Now your labor actually accounts to about 14% of what would have been wages for you is now goes into Social Security to pay for not your future, but to pay for the needy of your society at the time you're working. And then when you go to retire and become this indigent retired individual, they will pay you based on what they can get from the workers who are still working. And, of course, that's the way all societies did. But one society like Israel, like the early church, like Abraham, what you paid in to take care of the needy of your society was a voluntary offering. And then, of course, what Babylon, Egypt, eventually Rome, the government that Herod established in Judea, they all operated on forced contributions. But signing up was a voluntary act. And Herod did it by sending men out the act of getting signed up, registered as a contributor. This sacrifice that you make, this contribution you make, was called korban. And it always was called korban because that's the Hebrew word for sacrifice. Your Social Security, which is about 14% of what you would have been able to make in a given day or hour or whatever, or year, you give that into the government, and that is your sacrifice. That is your korban. And it is sacrificed to the government that you serve. And that government provides benefits for the needy at the time you're working. And that's the korban that you pay, your Social Security. Believe it or not, that static is coming back again.
Oh, man. I'm going to mute my phone and see if that helps.
Okay. I don't know. I don't have it in any place but when I call in you guys.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway... but anyway, we'll just keep plugging away. Tell me if you can't hear me anymore.
Okay, I will. Yeah, it didn't seem to help.
Well, I'm not getting this. It just came on. It just comes on real briefly, you know, like somebody turns on a mixer or something. But anyway, we're still connected, so we'll just keep plugging away. But anyway, that was the korban of the Pharisees that Jesus said made the word of God to none effect, because it wasn't based on faith, hope, and charity. It's not going to create the bonds of a society based on faith, hope, and charity. It's going to create no bonds whatsoever except for the bonds of police powers, which force you to continue to contribute. Now if somebody gets into trouble and they yell for help, most people won't go out in the street. They'll say, well, that's the government's job. It's what I pay taxes for. Call the police. Call 911. Don't call me. I'm not coming to your aid. And so they have created a disconnect in society so that nobody comes to each other's aid. Nobody cares about whether you're getting injustice or whether you're getting run over by a steamroller or whatever it is. They don't care because that's not their job. You know, I paid my taxes. That's somebody else's responsibility. Well, that's right. It's not your responsibility anymore. You paid your taxes. But it's also not your right to decide what to do with your time. What to do with, if you work for anybody, you've got to pay a share into the Federal. You have to, because you're subsidized. Your responsibility to society is subsidized. You know, I know somebody, excuse me, I know somebody who became a quadriplegic on his 18th birthday. And the government took care of him the rest of his life. Of course, somebody who was very powerful, actually I believe it was mafia, decided he wanted the property of this quadriplegic and ended up using his influence in government to eventually get the guy put in jail for code violations where he got gangrene, had to have a part of his buttocks cut out. This is a quadriplegic, put in jail for code violations in his shop. He didn't work in the shop, but this guy was very smart, and he hired other people to build things. And one of the code violations he was cited for was the extension cord to his gurneyed bed, because he couldn't, he was either in a wheelchair for a long time, but at this point he could only get around in the shop on a gurneyed bed. The extension cord was not covered to his bed. And so they cited him for it, and eventually he actually went to jail for a short period of time. And while in jail, because he can't clean himself when he defecates and nothing was provided for him, he got gangrene in his buttocks and had to have part of it cut away, and eventually lost his property because he couldn't, he tried to fight him in court, and this mafia character had too much influence in the government and happened to own all the property surrounding him, and eventually got that property. That particular character got an amazing amount of money from the government. He happened to have inside information about what property the government was about to buy, would often buy it for $50,000 or $60,000 and turn around and sell it to the government for $400,000. I actually found those records. I exposed this, but people say, oh, he has too much power and influence, so we're not going to prosecute, we're not going to pursue it. And so that's the kind of government you ended up with, because nobody cares. You know, I went into police work originally, way back in the ancient days, that when I was a young man. But we're going to come up, we'll tell you about that, and what you can do about the fact that you're losing control of your country, you're losing control of your rights, when we get back after these words from our sponsor.
Oh, well, thank you very much for that nice segue into our commercial section. Thank you all for tuning in today at Freedomizer Radio. Please go to freedomizerradio.com. If you'd like to participate in the chat, find archive shows there. Stop script. You know about stop script, right? Oh, my goodness. Our call-in number is 347-324-3704 if you would like to call in. seems for a second here I'm having a little difficulty with my ads. There we go. Okay. I must be having a hog day or something. Computer hog day. Bear with me for just a moment.
Should we fill dead air?
Jeez.
Tell us a little bit about your guest on the last two-thirds of the show. You say you're going to have a special guest.
Oh, our guest. Our guest is Bob Lovejoy, and we're going to be talking about EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique. Are you familiar with that at all?
Yep.
Very good.
No, me, I'm familiar with everything.
You are. You're so knowledgeable. So knowledgeable. I really have.
Age.
If you wouldn't mind at some point, spend 5 minutes talking about titular responsibilities in your community.
Okay.
I want to clear that in my brain, if you don't mind.
We will. Are you still working on the segue, or are we going to bypass that?
I think I got it. Okay, folks, we'll be right back. Thank you for your patience.
You are listening to Freedomizer Radio, where freedomizers freedomize freedom.
Okay, we're back. Thank you for joining us here today on this beautiful Saturday.
Well, we'll continue. Now, you had a question about titular.
Yes.
The one place I find that word, and I use it often, in the definition of a republic. And in a republic, the leaders are titular. And, you know, that's from the Latin titulus, which has to do with name. They actually have your ID back in Rome. Was often called a titulus, and your ID often included your name. When you got the baptism, there's that noise again. I guess if you guys aren't hearing that static noise.
Sorry.
Okay. I just know that when it comes too much, all of a sudden I get disconnected. But anyway, the titular leaders in governments that are true, pure republics don't have any exercising authority. They provide services, but their authority is what they call titular or in name only. And that's why that word is used to describe the leaders of a republic, because they're titular. And so the responsibility that a titular leader has is to do the job of government, health, education, welfare as an example, or organizing people in case of attack, to lead the way when there's a hue and cry. He's kind of the go-to guy. He knows a lot about a lot of things, and he's a pretty just and honorable man, but he can't really tell you what to do, but he does tell you what to do, but he can't compel you to do it by force, because his position of authority is not authority over you, but as a leader only. You see, that's a, when we use words like leaders today, you know, who are our leaders in the United States or in the United Nations or whatever, they actually have an exercising authority. They're not titular. They're not the leaders of a republic. They're leaders in a democracy, and often a social democracy at that. And so they can exercise authority. They can say, you're going to have health care, whether you like it or not, and we're just going to tax you. We're going to force you to pay into it because we think you should have health care, and we think that people should take care of one another. And we're going to force you to pay, and we're going to decide what kind of health care you get. If you're too old and too indigent, we may withdraw health care and just let you die because we're the authority and you're not. And that's where you go when you go the socialist way. Once you decide that it's okay to force your neighbor to pay for your education, then what's stopping them from forcing you to pay for their health care? You see, once you've let that camel in the tent, soon the whole thing's in there. And that's exactly why men like Karl Marx was so in favor of democracy, because he knew that democracy leads to socialism, because since the garden, we've been kind of selfish people. And this kingdom of heaven is not, or kingdom of God, this right to be ruled by God, doesn't work for selfish people. It only works for people who are unselfish. That's why you get phrases like love your neighbor as yourself, and he who gives up his life for his neighbor will have life more abundant, and do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And that's because those principles of a free government are essential. Just this last week, somebody was complaining about anarchists and libertarians, and they considered themselves a Christian. And they were a socialist. They were a progressive socialist. But they thought they were a Christian, and I just simply said, You know, Christ was an anarchist. Anarchy, well, he was, because anarchy means without arche. That's what it means, anarche, like antichrist, without Christ, against Christ. Well, anarchist is without arche. Arche is the Greek word for those leaders who exercise authority. They had another word for leaders who were just men you would like to follow, men you trusted, and you followed them until you said, oh, my goodness, he's having a senior moment, and he's leading us into danger, and you have to say, hey, I'm not following you anymore. And you could do that in a republic. And I wrote an article years ago, Tale of Two Alamos, and it was based on I was countering an article that was in the SMU alumni manual. My father was an SMU alumni, and he used to get that news magazine all the time. I said manual, but it's actually their news, the alumni news magazine. And so when he passed away, I got it, for at least until they realized that I wasn't an alumni. And they had an article in there talking about Travis's mark in the sand was a great moment in democracy. And I wrote the article back and sent it to the author, and I said, no, it wasn't. The Texas was a republic, not a democracy. Yeah, they had votes, but you were voting those titular leaders in. Travis was a leader, and he said, you know, some of us want to stay and fight, but many of you don't want to stay and fight because we're against these tremendous odds and we're liable to all be killed. Were they knew they couldn't defeat the army. They knew they would eventually be overrun, but they were hoping that, you know, Sam Houston and the rest of the boys were going to show up in time to save the day. And unfortunately, they didn't show up in time, but so they were overrun. But he made a mark in the sand, dragged his saber, and that actually took place. And he said, all those who want to stay and fight can cross the line and stay and fight. And all those who don't want to stay and fight can leave, because Santa Ana was giving them the chance of surrendering and leaving. Well, that night, a guy by the name of Rose, I think, or Roselon or something like that, I can't remember now, it's been a long time since I read the story, he actually didn't cross the line, and along with several others, but at least we know he didn't. And he climbed over the walls that night and left and went off to Tallahassee and started a meat market. And he didn't die at the Alamo. And they asked him years later why he left. He says, because I wasn't ready to die. And the other guys who did die, I mean, we have a distorted view of what went on there. They were overrun. Davy Crockett and a number of other men surrendered. They didn't fight to the last like John Wayne makes it look, because it was no point in it. They were completely outnumbered, 800 men to like 15,000. And they surrendered, and Santa Anna had them put up against the wall and shot as traitors to the Mexican government, and over the objection of many of his officers who opposed that. They said, these are captured soldiers. We can't just shoot them. But Santa Anna had his way, and they were just put up against the wall and shot, because Santa Anna wasn't a titular leader. But Travis was. They were fighting for a republic. They had an understanding of what that looked like, and that meant that the choice remains with the people. But it only works for people who can govern themselves, care about each other, care about each other's rights. And that's what Christ was preaching. That's what Moses was preaching. Moses said, love thy neighbor as thyself. That wasn't something that Jesus came up with. That was Moses. He set up a government with all free will offerings to support that government. You pick the minister. And he put restrictions on those ministers. There are certain things they couldn't do, which most people don't know. And we write about that, but it gets into a whole area which is more complicated. But the early church ministers were doing what the early Levites were doing. They weren't doing the same thing that the Pharisees were doing, because the Pharisees had got it wrong. They didn't know Moses. They didn't know what Moses said. And the problem today is Christians don't know what Christ was saying. And that's a bold statement. A lot of people don't like to hear it, but you're going to hear it from me all the time. But I'll back it up, and I'll prove it. So anyway, I promised that I would talk a little bit about what you can do. Well, you can do exactly what Israel was doing, exactly what the early church was doing. They were gathering together in congregations of 10 families. And those 10 families looked out amongst themselves and picked a minister they trusted. And they gave him money and funds to tend to the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith, health, education, and welfare for their society. They all homeschooled, but occasionally in homeschooling you need extra help, extra education. Well, this was the guy who was going to network you with 90 other families that were trying to do the same thing. And that's what we're doing on the Living Network at HisHolyChurch.org, is we're trying to gather those families together. Now, some families are gathering, and we use this email network to do that, but the big thing that goes on is not on the email group, because we know email's not salvation. Emails are time-consuming. The email groups are solely for the purposes of meeting other people in the area. So when you come on that group, you ask who's the local contact man, contact minister, and he has access to who else is on the group. You tell him where you're from, and he tries to link you up with other people, other families that are near you. And that's his job. He's helping you make contact. He's the plug-in-to guy. You plug into him. This way, if we had it so that all your emails and your addresses and your names and your phone numbers were just on a website, anybody could go find those. And people would come, and we have had trouble with guys trying to mine identities and find out who each other are, but we've created a fairly secure network. Well, it's very difficult, and so they usually go to other groups instead, you know, Facebook or something. And most of our connection, telephone numbers, exchanging, we have guys crossing the U.S. will meet up with you and then carry information to other people and start connecting you. But what kind of people do you want to connect with? Survivalists? Guys who want to make sure they survive? Or guys who are concerned about your survival as much as they're concerned about their own? Who care about your children as much as they care about their own? Who want to spend a little time in service to their community, helping their community come together? And that is what a titular leader does. He kind of does his homework. He studies more about how this all works. He takes a little extra time to find the other guys in the network. See, I don't need to know everybody. I need to know a few guys, and then through them, I'm connected with hundreds, maybe thousands of people. And that can grow. But it will only grow amongst people who are self-starting, have initiative, care about each other, are willing to forgive, not people who want to impose their doctrines and, you know, their interpretation of the Bible. It's really very simple. Do you care about righteousness? Do you care about what's right? Would you care about what's just? Do you care about your neighbor? Do you care about his family? Do you care about his children? Do you care about his success? And if you do, and you gather together with others like that, you will become something that's strong enough with the grace of God that you can stand against the New World Order, which isn't all that new and isn't all that orderly. You can stand and survive through chaos and social breakdowns, economic breakdowns, which we're all facing, through food shortage. People talk, you know, the show just before this is Dr. Prepper, and I saw that they usually talk about, stocking up and certain survival ideas and stuff like that, preparedness concepts, all which are good. But there is nothing more important in your survival kit than your friends and neighbors who care about you as much as you care about yourself. are themselves. And that is the ultimate survival tool, because you're going to need help no matter what you do. And so there's a lot of little tricks. We have become dumbed down and uneducated in the ways of a free society. And so the only way to learn that is to start gathering together. Now, that's what they were doing during the plagues of Egypt, when there were locusts and fire and brimstone, which all those things are naturally occurring events that happen, except for the last so-called miracle wasn't. But they happened when Moses said they were going to happen. And I can tell you that many of those things are going to happen again in our own time. And during that period, you can start developing those relationships with others. But you don't have to wait till things get bad, although for a lot of people, they're already getting bad. If we were really a Christian nation, we wouldn't have had millions of people losing their homes in the last few years. And we wouldn't have millions of people losing their homes in the next few years. But we're not a Christian nation. We're not doing what Christ said. We're not doing what Moses said. We're doing something else. We're not looking for titular leaders. We're looking for leaders who can exercise authority and force our neighbor to contribute to our welfare. And we have let this idea come in as if it's okay 150 years ago with the advocation of public schools and all the other public assistance programs that have grown and grown, you know, under FDR and under Johnson's Great Society. These things just snowballed to an unbelievable level. And when you try to go back that way, you become face-to-face with your own impatience, your own selfishness. And, concepts like EFT, which you guys are going to be talking about, although there are some pitfalls and dangers in that too as well, they fit right in, or can fit right in if properly done, with what we're talking about, because it takes a different kind of consciousness, different kind of attitude, in order to do that what Christ said, seek ye first the kingdom of God, the right to be ruled by God. You can't. It doesn't work for selfish people. It doesn't work for lazy people. It doesn't work for people that are afraid all the time. It takes courageous, honorable, charitable, forgiving people to find true liberty under God. It doesn't work for anybody else. And so, but I can tell you this, we're often seduced away from those characteristics by a society that says, oh, you don't have to worry about anybody. We'll take care of everything for you. You know, that's why Jesus said the Corban of the Pharisees, the social welfare system of the Pharisees, made the word of God to none effect, because it was no longer based on faith, hope, and charity. It was based on force, forcing your neighbor to contribute, which is why it says in the Bible that until John the Baptist, the kingdom of heaven was taken by force. Now, you read that out of the Greek, and you don't really understand what they're saying. They're saying until John the Baptist, in this particular time frame, everybody was trying to establish this kingdom of the world, the new world order, by forcing people to comply, to contribute, to participate. And John the Baptist didn't. He talked about free will offering. You know, if somebody didn't have two coats, if somebody didn't have a coat and you had two, share. That simple. That's as simple as it gets. And that's why they have the feast, is to renew that sharing. You were supposed to bring extra. And everybody, it's like a gigantic potluck. And that's what we're going to do in September, the last week of September, first week of October. I think the first day is around the 27th and 28th. Now, some people are coming out earlier to camp and help prepare, but the fact is that's what you do, is you create this gigantic potluck system where everybody comes and they're everybody is trying to outdo each other with sharing and contributing. And because it's in that you're renewing these bonds. When you come face to face, you can't do this with email. You have to meet face to face, shake hands, sit down, break bread together, talk eye to eye, man to man, woman to woman. And that begins to create a relationship. It begins, but you have to renew it, which is why they had numerous feasts throughout the year. And it can be fun. We're looking for people with talent to come. We're looking for, you know, like musical talents, skills they want to share. We have astronomer going to be there. We're going to show you things. We have Dark Sky Country. We're miles from the city. We're going to show you how to build yurts. We might have some tanning hides. We might have some sheep demonstrations. We're going to show you, you know, a lot of things that you're not going to find anywhere else. We're going to have more and more schedules showing you what we're going to share with you, health tips, all kinds of different things that we're going to. And the more people were involved, the more, because everybody's supposed to bring their own little skill, their own little knowledge base, and share it. Not just share food and help one another, but share knowledge and information. And so that everybody walks away more enriched, because everybody's trying to outdo each other in giving, which is not always the theme of the Burning Man Festival, although that's laced in there too. Sometimes a lot of people go there for what they can get out of it. They want to be entertained rather than help other people, enrich other people's lives. And so that has to be our motivation. And that will lead you to freedom and liberty, because you're willing to give up your time, your energy, for somebody else's benefit. And when you get 1,000 people together that have that same attitude, great things start happening. And so, anyway, it's the only way to go if you want to get away from that subsidizing society, that progressive society that thinks it's okay to take from you, because that society, instead of giving, 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 they will be taking, 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 taking. Every time you turn around, they'll want to take more. And the only defense against that is to come together in a society of righteousness and patience and love and forgiveness and giving, thanksgiving. The Eucharist of Christ, that's what it means. The word Eucharist means thanksgiving. Thankful for the opportunity of giving. But giving in a way that enriches people and strengthens people. But guess what? I think we're coming to the end of another show, Cheryl. So we're going to have to say goodbye and go on to the next show here in a few minutes. I don't know. I guess we didn't get any calls, so everybody was just absolutely raptured by this discussion.
As they usually are.
So anyway, how are things with you, Cheryl?
Oh, excellent. Excellent. I'm having the best day ever.
Yeah, you say that all the time. I can't believe that they're getting better each time.
Well, you know, I think I will have to share a little something with you. I'll have to give you a call.
Okay.
Yeah, we've run out of time, and it's a story.
Okay.
A story.
Well,
so
we always save it for next week. But
yeah,
anyway, I'll turn it over to you and I'll shut up.
Oh, yeah, it's always so wonderful to hear your voice. And, you know, I'm awfully glad that fans showed up early enough to hear your program today. Hi, buddy. He keeps coming in going, dang, I just missed it. But he got here early today, so we're glad to have him. All right, well, we're going to, I'm going to see if I can get my computer to cooperate here, and we'll play your outro, and we'll see you next week.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.